you recall the book of Revelation, there is a series of chapters on the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And there is a man on a white horse, a man who knows truth, knows the letter so well that he's ready now to go forth to show the glory of God. And it isn't long before he discovers that he doesn't know truth at all. He's beset with poverty, starvation, war, death. His shining white horse and his spear are valueless. And also, somewhere in Scripture, in the Gospels, we find a 12-year-old boy who does know truth, who makes a very pointed statement when he says, "Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business?" And we find there the keynote of that unusual life on this earth, which is called the life of the way-shower. We find in those words an immediate direction marker showing us that we have in some way digressed from our Father's business. And even among those who have studied long and hard and have traveled through many types of study, all the way up to what they thought was the highest study, covering every rung of the philosophical religious, the philosophical scientific, the metaphysical, the yoga, the unity, the Christian Science, the religious science, covering everything we can think of, and still, along comes war, death, the things of this earth. And we find that instead of having dominion with the truth we thought we knew, we are dominated. Helpless might be a more accurate word. And so we must see what this 12-year-old knew and what he meant by "about my Father's business." He later said, "For this was I born, for this cause came I into the world, that I might bear witness unto the truth." And so we may equate my Father's business with truth. He also spoke about my kingdom. And we may equate my Father's business and truth with my kingdom. And because God is reality, we may finally say that my kingdom is reality. My kingdom is truth. And only truth is reality. And if you cannot walk in truth, you cannot walk in reality and cannot be about your Father's business. Now, we think we know the truth. We've read about it. We've even had visions from within. But are we bearing witness to the truth that he spoke about? Where do we have to draw the distinction to lift the veil of our belief, to reveal that which is beyond mere concept. How can we really walk in reality so that when faced with war, with death, with starvation, with so-called evils of this world, we can say to them, "Peace, be still, it is I," and watch the storm subside? That would be a fairly good indication that we are walking in reality. It wouldn't be our final demonstration by any means, but it would indicate that to that extent we have walked out of the unreality of the letter of truth, of the unreality of the world that is not my Father's kingdom. Now he went a step further and said, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free." And mankind has been struggling for these 2,000 years to know that truth. The truth was known before he said it, and even 2,000 years before he said it. Let's take Job. Job was like a man in a rowboat with a leak. As the water kept coming in, he kept ladling it out. And as he turned here to ladle it out, it came in over there. It seemed that his afflictions were endless. He was fighting one evil after another. And so he addressed the heavens and said, "I would reason with thee." But what happened next? It was Job who discovered that God did not make the material universe. He discovered the nature of the unreality of matter. And he concluded in a statement that was rather oblique that he hangeth the earth on nothing. It's as if through the centuries a seed here and a seed there is planted, possibly without the intention that everyone understands at the moment the words are uttered, but rather with the intention that each seed in time shall bloom, and that truth will then later become apparent in a sort of a divine sequence, so that at the proper moment the truth will enter our consciousness one by one. Now what Job discovered 2,000 years before Jesus is still unknown in the world today. Job discovered the difference between thinking and knowing. When we say, "I know the truth," it has been our misfortune to make a misstatement. What we meant to say, but could not know the distinction at the time, was that we were thinking thoughts about the truth. And the difference is this: thinking has no substance. Knowing has substance. To think the truth cannot externalize as reality. To know the truth can. The man on the white horse thought about truth. Thought without about truth is a cloud without rain. Now, for example, let us pursue the idea that thinking is insufficient. It does not go into the heart of reality. It falls short. And yet, my kingdom is not of this world. My kingdom is truth, reality. And therefore, because my kingdom is not of this world, truth is not of this world, and you in this world cannot know the truth. It is impossible for a human mind to know the truth. And as we spend another 4,000 years to know the truth, those 4,000 years will be spent in the same errors. And those who follow us, not being taught correctly, will merely repeat the errors and give them new names. There will be new diseases. There will be new afflictions. There will be new powers on the earth that have no real power except in the mind of the beholder. And all because there are authorities who know the truth but cannot demonstrate that knowledge. Let us face the fact that God being all, whatever you know about anything that is not of God cannot be knowledge. You can only know about reality. How can you know about unreality? What can you know? God is all, and therefore the knowledge of God is all you can know. Beyond that, there is nothing to know. The truth ye shall know that shall make you free is that only God can know. Only God can know the truth. Only divine mind can know the truth. How can a finite mind know the truth? And so as we pursue this thought again, we take our own human thought. We find a very startling thing. Let's take you an hour ago. You may have decided to come here by a taxi. You may have decided to take a bus. You may have decided to drive. That was your thought. The next moment, after your thought, you were either in the bus, in the automobile, or in the taxi. The activity followed your thought. First the thought, then the action. As you dwell for a moment upon your thoughts, you will see that whatever you think about ultimately becomes the action you take. Your thoughts externalize and become the overt action that you pursue. Now, if your thoughts are about this world, what kind of action will you have? Action in and about this world. If your thoughts are about matter, health, income, personal relationships, security, bodily comfort, your position in society, what kind of action will follow? And so we find that our thoughts become our ways. And because our thoughts are not about the kingdom, but about this world, our ways are about this world, and we are many miles behind the lad who said, "Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business?" We are about our business. We are about the business of being human beings. And because of it, we find that the thoughts we entertain actually shut us off from God. We are separated from God by our own thought. We move in a world which is nothing more than our own thoughts externalized. Our complete outer experience represents our inner thought. The inner thought becomes the outer activity in all things. And because that thought is yours and mine and his and hers, it is not prospered by divine law. We invent our world. We invent our experience. We look everywhere at that which we call material conditions, persons, places, and things. But it is all our thought. We are looking everywhere at our thought about person, about place, about thing, about condition. And while we are doing this, present but unseen, unrealized, unexperienced, is the creation of God, perfect, flawless, eternal, immortal spirit. My kingdom of truth, of reality, is always functioning here, always at hand. But without a developed spiritual consciousness, the sense mind of man will continue in its thoughts and its ways, heedless of the statement that my thoughts are not your thoughts. Neither are my ways your ways. And now we're coming closer to the difference between thinking and knowing. Whatever I know in this human mind is only my own thought about what I think I know. And this is the hypnotist. So I may think that I know the truth that sets me free. I may think I control my world until I find a leak in the rowboat, and then another one. And even though I know all the truth there is to know, the evils that beset me continue to beset me. I cannot change them one whit. For as I find the answer to this one, another comes up from behind and hits me on the head. And so we sit down with ourselves and we ask, why, if I know the truth, that evil is unreal, that God is all, that God alone is power, that God alone is present, why does the evil continue? I know the truth. Why doesn't it set me free? And we have to find that missing link, don't we? The missing link must be that I do not know the truth. I haven't found how to know truth. And so it cannot set me free. I do not know God aright. I am still a human being knowing truth and finding that is a decoy. I am still living in my unreal identity, and I will continue to live in my unreal existence, suffering from unreal errors which I consider very real. Now if I take another step, that I am looking now for a house not made with hands, eternal in spiritual consciousness, eternal in the heavens. I am not looking for spiritual law to govern my material affairs. I am not seeking through truth to dominate matter. but rather I am willing to step up the ladder of spiritual understanding and to see the deepest secret. Perhaps you can explain it best by Joel's experience with baggage. Many of us probably thought we understood that. And yet it bears directly to this discussion. It has a meaning beyond possibly any that we have imagined. You may remember in the Belgian Congo, he lost his baggage. And because of it, he had 3 weeks in South Africa without it. And always he was convinced it would return, it would show up. But it didn't. His needs were provided for, he ate, he was able to buy clothes and so forth and travel, but still no baggage. And finally, when he came to terms with the problem and found the truth, the baggage did appear. But he made one very significant observation. He said, "My mistake was in the belief that the baggage would show up." Now that's what we must understand. That was his mistake. He actually believed it would turn up. And he said, "That was my mistake. There was no baggage." And then we say, "Well, then how could it show up if it wasn't there?" And then you see, if you come with that question, you've missed the point. And most of us have missed the point. There was no baggage. When he realized that all matter is a mental image, that's when the baggage appeared. As long as he had visible, tangible baggage, a reality, and it, as he put it, "I thought it would turn up. I had to release that," he said. "When I knew there was no it, then it appeared." And again you say, how could it appear if it wasn't there? The reappearance was the reappearance of an image. You must catch that the image of baggage was all that ever could be on this earth. Unless you catch that, you are going to go through this world with a material universe which is not your father's business. Yes, you will see baggage. You will even carry baggage. You will pay for baggage. But there is none. And you must know there is none. You must know that all that is spirit. You cannot know the truth about matter. And the reason is there is nothing to know the truth about. The only thing you can know about matter is that it is not. You cannot know the truth about anything except God and God's creation. And God did not create matter. And whatever you know about matter is the knowledge of unreality. Go back now to your reason for the perpetuation of error in your life, even though you allegedly know the truth. And see if you really know. Examine error of any nature. Are you trying to make something of it? Do you have some baggage there? Can you see that the it which you call error, if it is real to you, if it is existent, even as an existent disturbance, you are not about your father's business? you are in that in-between stage of entertaining conversational truth about error. And there is no truth about error. The remnant of your belief must drop from consciousness. The house not made with hands is the kingdom of God, is the consciousness of ever-present harmony, the consciousness of ever-present righteousness, the consciousness of ever-present goodness. And that consciousness, totally unlike the human mind, never has baggage, but instead it is conscious that all needs are fulfilled in the invisible spiritual kingdom, and how they appear and when they appear is completely dependent upon the degree to which I live in the consciousness of the kingdom of God, which is invisibly present instead of in this world, which appears to be present. So we have quite a lot of soul searching to do. Our real existence is as the Son of God. Our real existence is as immortal beings. And in our sense beliefs, we have no way of knowing that invisible reality through which we walk, which ever surrounds us, which is ever trying to press itself forward through us into manifestation. The most significant contribution you can make to this world is to reach that consciousness which knows that God is present where you stand. That the light of your own being alone can separate truth from hypnotic suggestion, spirit from matter, reality from unreality, the wheat from the tares. It is the light in your consciousness released, coming forth, which knows the truth. And unless you are consciously releasing that light, all statements made about knowing the truth are ineffectual, unsubstantial. They are not able to speak with tongues. And yet you have within you the power of God, which knows the truth and is called the Christ mind. And only to the degree that you are in the Christ mind, do you know the truth, which in turn dissolves the outer appearances which are called error. It isn't your statements, it isn't your intelligence, it is the eternal Messiah within who knows the truth that I in the midst of thee am God. So to walk in my kingdom on earth, we must live in the truth and not in the error. While we are busy fighting the error, trying to in some way isolate the error and then remove it, in that moment that you turn to the error to consider it, to do battle with it, you are not about your Father's business. And so we learn, the less I have to do with the error, even though it persists in having something to do with me, the less I accede to its wish, and the more I dwell in the truth of my being, of God being, of Christ being, of spiritual being, the more I contemplate not thing, not person, not place, and not condition, to that degree do I build a spiritual consciousness. My foundation for that building on a rock must be the knowledge that my kingdom is not of this world. Now, every time you try this, you will find another entryway into the kingdom. Try it now and see what I mean. Release person, every person, including self. Release place. Release thing. Release condition. You're out of a material universe. Your thought is not of thing, not of matter, not of this world. And it will create a vacuum. And that vacuum will be filled by my thought. My thoughts will flow into the vacuum when you have released person, place, thing, and condition. And then my thoughts in you, divine thought in you, becomes the motivation for the activity that follows. And just as human thought led to human activity, now divine thought brings divine activity. And you have a great secret. My Father worketh hitherto, and I work. As divine thought in you brings forth its own idea into invisible manifestation, you are one with it. The principle, the idea, the manifestation are all expressing as you. And now you're not competing with your true self. You're in a state of knowing the truth. Because the truth is knowing itself in you and as you. You're not thinking human thought. You're letting divine thought think itself through you, express through you, manifest through you, appear as you and as your experience. The personal self has given way to the divine self. And this becomes knowing the truth that sets you free. You are about your Father's business. I have overcome the world of human thought. of human belief about truth. And now that divine thought is your thought, divine ways become your ways. You walk under grace. It is only then that the real existence begins to manifest as your experience. And when you're not in the silence, you spend your time aware, not of things, not of persons, not of conditions, not of places, but aware of the qualities of God, remembering always that whatever your thought is must appear in the outer as your experience. Then why think of war? Why think of evil? Why think of error? Why think of those things you do not wish to appear in your experience? Even though something is pressing them into your thought now, the discipline, the desire to be about my Father's business must be greater than the self-will that says, I will be about my business, whether it be good or bad. The Christ rising within is your Redeemer. The Christ within is your release. You're turning the tide of error. Now make no mistake about it, whatever error is in your life is not your Father's business. Divine consciousness has nothing to do with error. And yet, as Paul said, this thorn in the flesh, this thing in me that makes me do what I don't want to do. Recognize there is that thing. To find out what it is. When one day the weather is gorgeous, when the sky is blue, when the breeze is balmy, when the waters are tranquil, don't say this is God's perfect physical universe. But no, this is but a hint of the real beauty behind it. Never make the mistake of accepting the physical world in all of its beauty as your Father's creation. For the next minute you'll be faced with the fact that your Father's creation is suddenly a hurricane, or a flood, or an angry storm. Then what are you going to say if you had just thought it was reality? Then what changed it? You'll have no difficulty if you have known that all you can ever behold in this world is thought. This is a world of thought. That which we call matter is thought. All matter, without exception, is thought. Well, who thought up all the weather? We didn't do it individually. You don't think up a storm. And so you find there is a universal thought, a regional thought, a localized thought. And this universal thought is what changes the weather. From a beautiful Hawaiian scene to a tropical storm. God has nothing to do with it. And you find that as you can live in the truth and watch the tropical storm, knowing it is no more real than the beautiful weather before it, you are knowing the truth. that spirit is all there is, and that which we call matter is our universal belief about spirit, individualized through each of us as an appearance. And now we see the whole material world as thought on a cosmic level, individualized through each of us appearing as, even our form, thought externalized. God did not create those forms. Now you must live in that realization, honoring only spirit, honoring the truth of ever-present perfection in all things, until you begin to be conscious of the fact that harmony is always present, invisible to all human sense perception. Harmony is always present. Your consciousness that harmony is ever present is your acceptance that God is always working day and night. This becomes a feeling, an awareness that the presence is ever present. Isn't this the truth that releases you and turns the tide? So many people who live in fear have no way of knowing that this fear they are expressing is their denial of God presence. It is their denial that truth is ever present. Do you see that truth can never be less than itself? Can you see that truth is never changed by error? That no matter how many errors appear, the truth is still ever present. And it is your spiritual consciousness that makes you aware of the truth that is present in spite of the seeming error. Whatever discord you have does not change the truth that is present, but your unawareness of the truth manifests as the discord. Now, as you permit yourself to take no thought, knowing the trap of thought, how thought even persuades you that you know the truth, as you take this divine advice and learn to consciously turn away, lift your vision above person, place, thing, condition, you will find that truth will come to you in an infinite variety of its own forms. This is just the first toe in the door of my kingdom. When Joel goes further than that and talks about the unfettered forms that he sees, about joining those who had gone before, whom we thought no longer existed, when he talks about the limitless beauty, and when we make our comparisons with our own individual experiences, the glimpses we have entertained, of that invisible universe called my kingdom, then we realize that with human thought, we are conditioned to deal only with the things that perish. We hadn't realized that human thought deals only with that which is temporary. Never will you find human thought dealing with the external, with the eternal truth. Your income is temporary. Your health is temporary. Your mortal existence is temporary. And all human thought is about that mortal existence. Mortal thought is laboring for that which is temporary, for the meat that perishes. Now, why would divine thought labor for the things that are temporary and that perish? And so you see, the trap of human thought is that it always levels you down to this finite lifespan. And naturally, it shuts out the infinite power, love, glory, truth, principle, mind, spirit, soul, life, activity, which is the very basis of my kingdom on earth. Overcoming this tendency of mortal thought to deal with that which must perish, we expand consciousness, opening to the divine influx, not just during meditation, why should we go for gold for 3 minutes and spend the rest of the 24 hours with tin? God is ever present. Should we experience the presence of God only in the 3 minutes of meditation? The real universe, being non-corporeal, non-structural, non-physical, non-material, non-mortal, our consciousness must dwell on the qualities of that real existence. If you are communing within, if you are contemplating harmony, what will externalize? If you are contemplating eternality, what will externalize? Your consciousness will externalize. Always we on the external are but that appearance of our invisible consciousness. And if we rise above our human thought, our human sense of things, and release that spirit of God in us, then our complete life must shadow forth those qualities which we have until now thought represented our ability to express the qualities of God. That's as difficult an error to understand as the baggage. Again, we must face this belief that we can in some way express the qualities of God. We must understand that we never can express the qualities of God. You do not have the ability. There is no one on earth who can express the qualities of God. It is a case of mistaken identity. God expresses God's qualities where you stand, and only God is there. It is God who expresses God's qualities. And only God who can exist. In your awareness of real truth, knowing that God is expressing and is the only life that can be where you appear, you catch the glimpse of your reality, of your kingdom, of your immortal self, of your real existence. You are that Spirit of God which is on the earth, invisibly manifesting itself at this moment everywhere. And it is your human thought, believing otherwise, which creates a false sense of existence about your real self and your real universe. And in that wrong identity and wrong universe, that is where error appears. It appears in what we have called thought, and come to learn is never thought, it is imitation thought. There is only one thinker. And all human thought is an imitation about thought. We have no capacity as human beings to think. But we do have the capacity for imitation thought. And it is that imitation thought which thinks it knows the truth, which has an imitation truth. And that is where we all founder on the reefs. Now we're removing our duality because the secret of living in truth is to recognize that only truth can exist. You remember in the early metaphysical days how you were using arguments. You remember how you tried to heal sick bodies, to make poor people wealthy, to remove problems. And then as you advanced, that wasn't what you tried to do at all. You began to see that even while you were doing these things, you still had your conflict. You still have mountains and valleys, joy and sorrow, extremes in both directions. And you realize there was something beyond. And that something beyond is the power of divine thought in you. Divine thought is the kingdom of God. Divine thought is truth. Divine thought is life. Divine thought is harmony. Divine thought is beauty. Divine thought is its own manifestation. Divine thought is Christ manifest. The moment your mind then begins to reach out to understand, you are trying to accomplish the impossible. That is when you must quickly catch the intruding tempter, which is trying to persuade you that you can think this thing through. All you can do is empty your thoughts and let divine thought in you build its own foundation of truth. I know no person, for there is only spiritual being. I know no thing, for there is only spiritual substance. I know no condition, because spirit is unconditioned. I know no error, because spirit is ever perfect, ever functioning, ever being itself, and besides spirit, there is nothing else. Sort of leaves you nowhere and yet everywhere. It leaves you in the vacuum which only truth can fill. This is your way to dominion, and when it hits hard and fast. There is a pure realm in meditation in which the mind itself, which had intruded and up to now had to try to control, suddenly finds no place for itself, and you're in this clear, fresh spiritual atmosphere where time and space are completely out of your consciousness. You may call it seeing all of the wisdom of the world in a second. That is timeless. But these moments become quite frequent. And in these moments, you are being fed the substance. So that when this substance feeding you becomes divine consciousness instead of human consciousness, you can now look forth without processes of thought. And now what you say, I know, is quite different than what you had said, I know, before. This knowing has the substance. This knowing looks at error, and it doesn't chase the error. It doesn't get after it with a stick. It doesn't wince at the error. It doesn't run from it. It doesn't fear it. This knowing is a different kind of knowing. This knowing doesn't know the error. It knows the invisible truth instead of the error. It dwells in what is, and it doesn't dwell in it with effort. It doesn't have to take thought about the truth. It is now the consciousness of truth. It is that kind of knowing which requires no reflection on your part, no thinking to know. It is beyond thought. It is a knowing that is as deep as your name, the facts about yourself. It is an automatic knowing. You become the living consciousness of truth. You see that? The consciousness of truth is yourself. And that knowing can look at any error of any nature. Death itself. But it never departs from the truth of its own being. It never accepts the lie about itself. It is always about the business of truth. It is always the living kingdom of God on earth. Now we ought to build that consciousness. We ought to live in that consciousness called Christ consciousness, truth consciousness, reality consciousness, kingdom consciousness, God consciousness, Father consciousness, which can look at any appearance of error in this world of any nature and know the impossibility of it, because only God is. Only truth is. Take that word impossible. Learn its value. Error is impossible. Matter is impossible. This world is impossible. That which is unlike God is impossible. That means you don't have to change it. You don't have to improve it. You don't have to correct it. It only seems to be there. What you have called death seems to be there. Nothing can remove living consciousness. You have not seen living consciousness. And therefore, you think living consciousness has gone somewhere. When you see error, it is because you are not seeing what is there. Ever-present divine reality must be there. This world is not here. My kingdom is. And in your developed spiritual consciousness, this becomes the accepted fact. The error never was there. It is impossible. For if error is possible, then the teaching of Jesus is untrue. The teaching of all the mystics has no point whatsoever if there is a possibility that truth is not omnipresent, that harmony is not omnipresent. And so learn to dwell in the truth. This dwelling in truth is far more important than your ability to reason yourself out of the error. If you dwell in the truth, it will become your living consciousness. And where error might have appeared, truth will manifest itself as the external experience, preventing even the appearance of the error. So we dwell in love, we dwell in harmony, we dwell in truth, we dwell in peace, we dwell in fulfillment, we dwell in ever-present spiritual reality. We are taking no human thought. Every human thought is a digression from your Father's business. This is a good place to rest a moment.